Hello, everyone, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
I'm Candace LePage.
And your glasses were off just a second ago, and it was weird because...
I could have been anybody.
You could have been anybody.
I know, I look like a totally different person
you
with them
been,
off.
You could have been a ditto.
I could have been.
A ditto.
It's true.
Which I know what that is. I don't. So one Pokemon down and like there's 600 of them to go.
700 and some. I don't know.
Who has the time? Apparently we do. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the video game adaptation Pokemon Detective Pikachu. A lot of weird words in one sentence.
I feel like there should have been a pause, like Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
But there's no colon in between the Pokemon and Detective.
Really? Really? Maybe I just put one there in my head.
It's possible. That's in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the movie news from the past week, including Fast and the Furious. The producer behind the franchise was just kicked off at Fast, and boy, is he furious. And then it's been 10 years since J.J. Abrams rebooted Star Trek. So what has happened to that ambitious Star Trek movie franchise, and will it ever return? And then finally, we have new trailers this week featuring a Spider-Man, a sad farewell, and the second chapter about a killer clown. But first, we are still living in the Disney cinematic universe.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's like a multiverse at this point.
It is a multiverse, and more on that later. But so, yeah, we're still kind of getting the effects of Fox being folded into Disney. And, it's kind of like the worst. I don't want to say it's the worst case scenario, but it's pretty bad, you know, as predicted. Multiple fronts this week. We had Disney confirm that they're reducing the Fox slate to about 5 and 6 movies a year. Last year, Fox released about 11 or 12 movies. That's sort of been the average. So
cut in half.
Cut in half. And, the weird part is that Disney released 5 movies last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were all sort of franchise movies. So you're talking about Solo. You're talking about... No, Beauty and the Beast wasn't last year.
No, it was the year before.
It was the year before. But there was like a Disney quote-unquote... There was... doesn't matter. But the point is, all of Disney is like these franchise films versus Fox, which put out 2 or 3 franchise films, including Deadpool, which was very successful. The Maze Runner, which is not like exactly an expansive universe. I think actually that was the last Maze Runner film. And then Predator, which was not very successful at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of draws in stark relief that, you know, what the merger with Fox is sort of going to cost the movie-going audience.
Yes. Yes, those of us who want some sort of diversity in our films, and I don't necessarily mean diversity in the way that we use the word diverse now to talk about different cultures. I just mean anything that isn't a superhero movie.
Yeah, or a space movie, or a remake of a cartoon from the 40s. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's nothing wrong with those. I enjoy those films too. Obviously, I go see them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in between things, and sometimes, you know, when I'm just sitting at home on a Thursday evening or a Friday evening, I think, wouldn't it be nice to just watch a movie right now? And I like to watch something that's a little less massive.
Yeah. Or even just not like on a Tuesday, because, you know, the weekend is kind of the time for massive things, but, you know, you can watch like, the El Royale, Battle of the El Royale. Like,
I really enjoyed that film.
Yeah, you know, anytime. Or something like The Greatest Showman, which...
Or here's the thing you'll never get to see. The type of films that Robert Altman made, which is what I did last weekend. I just watched an old Robert Altman film. I feel like that film, though any of his films, will never be made in this cinematic atmosphere right now.
Yeah, you'd have to be Robert Altman to make a Robert Altman film.
Well, yeah.
And I think, that kind of says a lot. When you compare it to other studios where you have, in 2018, you had Sony, which is actually a couple of studios, put out 18 movies. Paramount, which is, and we'll get to this later, not exactly in the best of shape in terms of studios, had 11. And then Warner Brothers puts out like 22. And then you have Disney put out 7, and now with Fox, they're going to put out like 5 or 6. So, the, you know, you have the studio with a 40% market share putting out the same number of movies.
Yeah. I mean,
the one with the smallest.
I went to the theater yesterday to see Pikachu, and I couldn't find it because first there were 6 theaters playing Avengers.
Yeah,
and I was like,
yeah.
Did I get the wrong date? No, it's just because the screen hadn't changed over
right.
onto the you know, list of films that weren't the Avengers. Mm-hmm. Like, really? 6 screens of 10? Come on. I don't know.
But I mean,
homogeneity is really making me sad.
But, homogeneity, too.
I just really wanted to use that word.
Fair enough. But, you know, it's part of the Fox merger also is that because we had the announcement this week that there's going to be a new Star Wars trilogy starting in, I think, 2024? Two? Actually, it's 2022, 24, and then 26.
Yeah, okay.
And then in between that, we have the Avatar movies. Mm-hmm. So we have Avatar 2 coming out in 2020, and then we get like a year off. And no, actually, it's been moved to 2021. That was the other news.
Yeah.
So from 2021 to 2027, every year it'll be, at Christmas time, it'll be Avatar, Star Wars, Avatar, Star Wars, Avatar, Star Wars, Avatar.
I'm going to have so much time every Christmas for the next 7 years.
It's really incredible that, I guess because of the franchise culture at Disney, you can make those kind of plans that far out. And because of the market share, they can, like, sort of surround this date and say for the next decade this is our date, like the rest of you shoo. And it's really,
can I sigh any
yes,
louder?
Sigh. Sigh away. Sigh away. But this is like the worst case scenario that a lot of people had, and one that wasn't terribly well covered in the movie press, because it was all about, ooh, we can now watch the Fox logo before Star Wars movies again.
Like, and yay, all these characters will all live under the same banner.
All the X-Men can be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. How exciting. And now that Avengers Endgame is over, will the next big bad be Galactus? Oh, boy. And it's just like, no, you're missing the other angle, which is, as you said, the diversity. If you're losing 5 or 6 movies a year, are you going to get El Royale? Are you going to get something like Widows?
Mm-hmm.
Are you even going to get Deadpool? Deadpool was born out of the fact that Fox could take that gamble, that there wasn't this like 17, 18, 19 movie series under their belts, that you had to obey the formula and obey the trend that, you know, their X-Men movies weren't doing that well, that they could say, you know what, yeah, maybe we'll just do an R-rated movie about, you know, a meta character who, you know, swears and kills people, and, you know, you can get away with that. And although I did see somebody say, like, now that Stan Lee's gone, maybe they could have Deadpool do the requisite cameo in all Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, which would be hilarious. But, you know, Disney is so risk-averse. They're not even going to bet on something that's a sure thing, like Deadpool, because it's off-brand, which is, like, the very middle-of-the-road PG, PG-13 popcorn stuff.
Yeah.
You have to eliminate one of the quadrants. It has to be for all quadrants.
Yep, got it.
But yeah, it's kind of sad. So instead we're going to get probably Safe Bets. Like, there's another Poirot movie from Kenneth. Although I enjoyed Murder on the Orient Express, so I'm not necessarily against seeing more Poirot, but because that's like something you can franchise. Like, you can make Poirot movies out of the yin-yang, but if anybody cares. But I mean,
the new Bond.
But I mean, how many times are we remaking Robin Hood and King Arthur? And, you know, maybe
it's just,
we can...
I feel so depressed right now. Thank you.
Wait until you see Poirot Begins.
So the only, the one good outcome, I think, that will happen of this sort of thing will be the dawn of a new indie film culture.
That might be the sort of the blowback. That might be the thing that sort of comes out of this, because you can't. We're already kind of seeing that on the streaming sites. Mm-hmm. You know, you have people like Martin Scorsese and Steven Soderbergh going to Netflix already. So that may be the springboard, and maybe the. And Netflix is already kind of being pushed to embrace the theatrical experience more, and they probably enjoyed a lot of good press with, you know, allowing Roma a lot of theatrical room to breathe. So maybe that could be, you know, and there are a lot of smaller distributors out there, like A24 and STX and VVS here in Canada. So it's possible, and I hope that's the case. It's just, you know, Disney is a big black hole with 40% of the market.
Just sucks everything in. All goes there to die.
Like a big black hole. So moving on to other franchises.
And what bigger franchise can you get right now, really?
Than the Fast and the Furious?
I mean, how many other films have like 9 films out and already like
are
side
still huge.
Films?
Yeah, so Neil Moritz is a name you may not know, but he is the guy who's been behind every Fast and the Furious movie since The Fast and the Furious in 2001. But apparently he's not easy to work with, which is why he is out as the producer of the Fast and the Furious movies. There is a spinoff, The Fast and the Furious Present Hobbs and Shaw, which comes out in August, which I have ambivalent feelings about.
I mean, to be fair, my feelings about The Fast and the Furious are, I saw the first one, saw the second one, and the third one, and that's as far as the story goes for me.
Oh, man.
Which, of course, is confusing, because the third one isn't a sequel to the first or the second.
No, and then there are several chapters after the third one
that take place before it. Yeah, I keep meaning to go and watch them, because people really love this. Like, it's really popular series amongst people that I respect, too. It's not, you know, it's not like it's just a bunch of, you know, people who want to watch The Avengers over and over again who are talking about how good Fast and Furious is.
No, and that's the thing, too, is that it's one of these rare kind of organic franchises where the first one didn't come out and somebody didn't, okay, over the next 10 years, we're going to release part 2, part 3, part 4, and then we're going to spin off part 4, and then we're going to have a spin-off. Another spinoff, and then we're going to do part 5. It hasn't been like that. They're kind of, and it was in this Variety article where they had talked about Avengers-izing the Fast and the Furious franchise, because there is this one that stars Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham coming out, the Hobbs and Shaw one, and then they're talking about another one with Charlize Theron, who actually played the villain in the last Fast and the Furious movie, and then they're actually working on Fast and the Furious part 9. Which I think starts shooting sometime later this year. But, I mean, to put it in like sort of a Marvel context, this is like if Kevin Feige got fired, who's the guy who's overseen the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe since Iron Man got fired.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, how, you know, producer is one of those terms that describes the work of a number of different people. Like, what kind of producer was he? You know, did he work closely with the writers? Did he work closely with the director? Did he work closely with the actors? Where was his big thumbprint on these films? I really don't know.
No, that makes... I mean, it's interesting, too. Like, it wasn't his concept. Like, he didn't wake up one morning and go, I know, street racing. It was brought to him. There was like some article in some magazine about the street racing scene, and somebody brought it to Universal, and then Universal assigned him to it because I guess he was under contract at Universal. And then he put the first Fast and the Furious movie together. He takes credit for like casting Vin Diesel, and actually him and Vin Diesel have worked a lot together because they also did XXX.
Ah, okay.
So he kind of takes credit for, I guess, the Vin Diesel brand. But what's interesting is that apparently Vin Diesel was okay with him, like, being turfed. So...
Yeah. Which is interesting. I mean, Vin Diesel is a notoriously nice guy.
And loyal.
Right? Which a lot of people don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
And so if everyone feels it's so difficult to work with this guy and you know, the person who maybe works most closely with him, being Vin Diesel, is like, yeah, no, it's time for him to go.
Yeah.
He's probably a really terrible person.
Right. And it's another, like, one of these background things on that's going on the Fast and Furious movies, because you had, there's apparently a Vin Diesel, Dwayne Johnson feud as well.
Yeah.
There's some...
I mean, how much of that is for the storyline. I wonder.
That's part of it too. Is like, do they really hate each other, or is that just because like they're the two like alpha dogs?
Dwayne Johnson, also a notoriously nice guy, right? Right. It's odd to me that these two people.
I don't know. Maybe it's like the R potion in the Pikachu movie, they are each other's purple gas, and they set each other off. But yeah, it's curious that there's a lot of politicking behind this, which is sad to hear. Because as someone who has enjoyed this movie series, and surprisingly, because I'm not like a car guy, like the last thing I care about is cars. Not that the movies are really about cars now anyway. Mm-hmm. They're about like
family.
Like, yeah, they're about
family.
They're about family and then driving the car out of an airplane and then parachuting into a mountain road somewhere in Eastern Europe. driving your pickup truck across the Arctic ice and then kicking a torpedo out of the way. You know, regular stuff.
Yeah, that happens.
But what disappoints me in seeing all this politicking is that this franchise grew so organically that, you know, piece by piece, story by story, character by character, that is just kind of sad that now that they see all the money to be made from this, that it seems like everybody's clawing at everybody else. And that's kind of sad to me. And I wonder if it'll have an effect on the finished film, because, you know, the family thing may be BS, you know, whether that translates off screen. But, you know, it feels like it could very well be like they're a family on screen, they're a family off screen.
Well, and, you know, this is a thing, right? Who knows? Maybe Paul Walker was sort of the glue that kept it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without him being part of it, it's kind of, who knows?
Yeah, it could be. That is curious.
Because it was film number 7 that it was during filming that he died, right? So that one came out with him in it, and then number 8 was the first one without him. Yeah, so, I mean, this is essentially, like, all new territory now.
It's true. When you put it that way, because you wouldn't think, like, Paul Walker is the quintessential piece to this. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, I remember watching Fast and the Furious 7, and it ends with like, a fairly meta moment where Vin Diesel's driving away, and then Paul Walker pulls up. And this scene was obviously shot after Paul Walker passed. Mm-hmm. But Paul Walker's character drives up next to him, and they have, like, a little drive up the highway, and then you have this overhead shot, and I'm almost getting misty remembering but they have this overhead shot of the cars driving up a coastal highway, and then the car with Paul Walker and it veers off, and then you follow Vin Diesel's car as it keeps driving up the highway, and it's oddly touching, and that's the way I want to remember the Fast and the Furious franchise. But don't worry about Neil Moritz, because he has a pay-to-play contract.
Yeah, he's getting money no matter what. So
Neil Moritz will be fine.
Yeah.
And we will be fine, because we're going to take a break and come right back in a minute. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU.
You've had a hard time finding your place in this world, haven't you? Never knowing your true worth? You can settle for a less than ordinary life. Or do you feel like you were meant for something better? Something special?
You will always be a child of two worlds, and fully capable of deciding your own destiny. The question you face is, which path will you choose?
And that's a clip from the trailer for the 2009 reboot of Star Trek, directed by J.J. Abrams, and it's actually been 10 years since that came out.
Yeah, I just, I remembered that recently. I have this app that I can, like, read today's tweets, like, years later.
Right.
Yeah, there were some things about the movie coming out or upcoming or something, and I was like, oh my gosh, that was 2009? Really? That was so long ago.
Yeah, no, it's, it feels long ago. I was, like, very pumped about this movie.
I saw
it three times in theaters.
I saw it a few times. So, and I have been a Star Trek fan since I was born, and potentially actually from the womb.
In utero?
Yeah, because my family are Trekkies, like, big time. From my grandmother to my mom to my aunts and uncles, period. Like, that is it. So I grew up on Star Trek. And of course, watched, you know, The Next Generation and some of the shows that followed that. Though eventually, I moved out of my parents' house and didn't have cable, and you know, there weren't ways to watch things then. So I have been rewatching them since then. But so in 2009, like, there hadn't been a movie, there hadn't been a TV show in so long.
Four years.
And it was, yeah. I remember going, oh, this is going to be so exciting. New Star Trek. I saw the film, and from the opening, like the very beginning, the sound, I almost started crying in my seat. It was just like, oh my God, this is so major. And it did not disappoint.
No. And I know a lot of people are not fans of sort of what they've been doing with Star Trek, and that goes for, like, Discovery as well. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of those people maybe don't appreciate how things sort of have to change. I mean, the Star Trek fans will show up.
Yeah.
And this was sort of the problem at the end of, like, Enterprise, which was the last show before everything went fallow. It was playing to fan service. And it's like, the fans will show up. You have to get other people into the groove, into the seats. And I think that's what the movie did very good. There was a lot of callback to people who were fans, and a lot of really great casting too.
Oh my God, Carl Urban!
Yeah, he's a revelation.
Like, what? I couldn't even believe it. Like, because you didn't even see him on screen first; you just heard his voice.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh my God, his bones! Like, it just is. He was always my favorite character, anyways. But yes,
yeah, and he's so good, and you know, even Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, who's, like, unfortunately he died before Star Trek Beyond came out. But, like, I think he has, like, one of the best moments in these films, like, in Into Darkness, when Kirk tells him to put on a red shirt, and it's, like, this sort of, like, meta moment between Anton Yelchin and the audience, where he kind of looks into the camera and, like, has a grimace, because it's like, you know what red shirt means.
Yeah, see, and I think that Into Darkness is where this series just went off the rails. And the thing is, like, I have said it here on this show, right? It's J.J. Fanservice Abrams. That's his name. And it was okay in the first film. I think it was just enough fan service and just enough reimagining and retelling. And it, like, hit a really careful balance. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to go see it with a person who never saw any Star Trek whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And so afterwards, he came to me and said, okay, so what did I miss? Because there were definitely parts that you were more excited about than I was.
Right.
And it was okay, because he still really loved the film, right? It was a really good balance. Mm-hmm. And then somehow J.J. lost his way a little bit, and it all became fan service.
I'm not sure if he lost his way or if he just didn't know where to take it, which I think has always been J.J. Abrams' downfall, is that he knows how to build the mystery box, but he doesn't know what to do once he opens the mystery box. And I remember the press tour of this movie and them talking about, like, this is going to be great because, you know, we've done things in this movie that are going to open up the universe. So we're going to do unexpected things. We're going to take this in weird new directions. And we'll bring
Into Darkness.
But
there's nothing new.
Well, I mean, this is it. Like, we can reintroduce old elements and do it, like, and sort of remix them and do cool new things. And then what's the first thing they do is they remake Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, and then they just character switch. Like, everything about it, like, no, it's new because it's different.
Right.
Like, no, it's the same thing. No.
And Benedict Cumberbatch does not do his best work. If it had been, yeah. I think they had cast originally either Javier Bardem or Benicio del Toro as
either
Khan.
One of those would have been better for so many
yes.
reasons.
Yes, because if you see Benicio del Toro in like in Star Wars: The Last Jedi, mm-hmm. where he plays like a morally ambiguous character, and it's kind of like really a side role, he's really great.
Yeah,
it's sad that they kind of went to. Not that Benedict Cumberbatch is necessarily milquetoast, but he was in that, where mm-hmm. he did not have that sort of magnetic sort
no,
of
No, he did not seem
thing.
Like a genetically superior being.
No, but even like Ricardo Montalban.
Which is surprising, because Benedict Cumberbatch does seem like a genetically superior being. I don't know how his, what was his name? John
Harrison.
Harrison, yeah.
Yeah, he's... He does look like he was made in a lab a bit, but not in the way you would compare to Ricardo Montalban, because just like everything about Ricardo Montalban, there's a scene in the original episode he's in.
Space Seed, by the way.
Right, no Space cares. Seed.
Thank Season 2 of the original series.
Thank you. Where they're having dinner after they've defrosted him, Conan, and his crews. And they're having dinner, and like Spock is kind of like probing him, and he's like, "Captain, I give you credit because as your first officer attacks, you watch and observe." And then later he like smashes. Kirk's talking about the history of it, and he smashes his fist on the table. And goes, "We promised the world order," and then he realizes what he's done, and he goes, "Excellent, excellent." It's such a great actor in such a great role, mm-hmm. and you don't get any of that in Into Darkness. And I think that's the most, looking back at Star Trek 09, is that it's this thing that had a lot of promise,
yeah.
and that was quickly squandered, even mm-hmm. though there was like 4 years between movies, mm-hmm. and unfortunately they just didn't know how to pay it off. So Star Trek, come back, we miss you. Although there,
some people say it's already still back. Discovery, which I haven't watched.
Discovery is good. I like Discovery a lot. And then there's a Picard show coming up later this year.
Oh, so. Yeah. I don't know about that. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. although they have an interesting cast shaping up, but maybe we'll get into that some other time. Right now, I'm sure you really want to talk about It Chapter 2 trailer.
Sure. Segway.
It's not one of my best.
It's a blunt one, but, you know, gets the job done.
That's right. So, yeah, it's been a long... I'm surprised it took them this long to release something.
Yeah, because they were, like, announcing cast, God, like, the month after the first film came out, and it was in the summer of 2017, is that right? Or 2018?
Well, it's like at the end of summer. It was like September, the first weekend of September. In
okay, so it's about the same time of the year that they're releasing this one.
Almost exactly 2 years.
Yeah, but it's true. Like, there's been, like, I don't even feel like there's been cast photos, really, or much no. come out at all, which is great, because then they release a trailer and everybody goes crazy.
Right. And it's an it's one of those trailers where they kind of take, like, a scene from the film, and mm-hmm. it's Beverly yeah. coming home.
Yeah.
Creepy home.
Yeah, yeah.
Things don't change
again,
for Beverly.
And again, it's one of those things where I know, and I can't remember the name of the person who's creating it, but how he says that he didn't really watch the first miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
But man, there's so much. Like, it lines up
Andy Muschietti
so much
yeah.
with the miniseries.
Mm.
And so I don't know. I don't know if I believe him. But there were so many times that I'm like, oh, man. So, but this scene was a little different. And to be fair, it's been a long time since I've read the book, so I don't remember. Because in the trailer, they sort of bring up the whole, like, I was daddy's little girl. Were you daddy's little girl? So bringing up, of course, Beverly's trauma.
Right.
The trauma, which, you know, was greater than the fear of the clown, which ultimately is the reason why she survived, which is, you know, why she's so awesome. But
right.
but I'm like, is that just put in now because of all those things where we, you know, realize that her trauma is her strength, or was it actually in the book? And I don't remember.
Mm. Interesting.
But well done. Like, I didn't. So I love horror films, but I also know that images are terrifying, and I also know when terrifying images are coming. So there were many parts of that trailer where
right.
I was just like kind of half like side eye out of the corner of my eye. But they did such a great job with the like dark hallway and the kitchen behind it, and then just the tiniest like motion and shadows, and it's just so well done. I mean, to me, that's the beauty of horror, is that you can give so much fright with so little to see. And I'm glad that there are films coming out like this again. It's not just all, you know, gore or monsters. It is actually about the things we don't know are behind us.
Yeah, and scary naked old ladies.
Women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
also in The Shining.
Also in The Shining.
And Pet Sematary.
Yeah, Stephen King has a thing.
Yeah.
I was amazed how like engrossed I got in that. Like I almost automatically despise things that other people enjoy. Because it's like,
how
contrarian of you. Most people like it, forget it. Or I started looking for, but you know, I've watched the trailer about four or five times, and it's really engrossing every time.
Yeah, well, the pacing of it too, right, just draws you right in.
Yeah, it's a little movie almost.
Yeah,
and I guess from the looks of it too, they actually included a lot with the original kids. Like, it's not just going to be like the adult story, but there'll be like flashbacks and asides to the kids from the original movie, which is
smart.
Probably pretty smart given $350 million that movie made. Speaking of bank, another trailer that came out last week is Spider-Man Far From Home.
I have to admit that I did not watch the trailer because
Tom Holland told you if you don't see Endgame.
If you haven't seen Endgame, there are spoilers. So I considered watching it. And then I was like, no, let me see what I can find online. So I'm like, is there a spoiler-free version? Or how, like, is this just a joke? Or is it really spoilers? And so I just didn't watch it.
I have to believe part of it is a joke because Tom Holland is famously leaking, is famous for leaking. But no, if you haven't seen Endgame, I mean, we actually talked about spoilers on last week's show.
I haven't listened to last week's show.
We didn't talk about the spoilers themselves, but like the spoiler.
December or something to listen to.
Yeah, the spoilery culture kind of thing. It's understandable if you haven't seen Endgame. It makes a pretty, like, right from the word go, sort of immediately reveals why it's
I did watch it earlier, though, the one that came out, you know, a few weeks back.
Yeah.
I did watch that. And Jake Gyllenhaal? Really?
As Mysterio.
Didn't expect that.
Yeah. And I'm sure there'll be some sort of twist with Mysterio, because it's revealed in the trailer that this Mysterio is first of all, a hero, and second of all, comes from an alternative Earth. Or does he? Because as comic fans will know, Mysterio is a sort of a master of effects and special effects and wizardry and things. So, you know, it's possible he could be a secret villain or a not-so-secret villain. But yeah, it's interesting that I think it's going to play upon some of the themes introduced in Homecoming and in Spider-Man's other parts in the Avengers films. I think it'll play on that fairly well. And I think it'll land, because a lot of people are very hyped about what the conclusions of Avengers Endgame and how things end up, what the effect is on the larger world, let's say.
Yeah.
Not just like on the heroes, but on the larger world. Like, what does the new world order look like for people? And I think that's what the trailer teases at, that it'll definitely get into some of that. And I also enjoyed how, if you watch the trailer, Samuel L. Jackson just dropped any pretense that he's playing a character called Nick Fury. He's just basically playing Samuel L. Jackson in an eye patch.
I mean, he's mostly been playing Samuel L. Jackson for the last 20 years, but
there's a scene though where Peter Parker's like, I'm just trying to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and Nick Fury's like, bitch, please, you've been to space, which is a very it's not necessarily a Nick Fury line.
Yeah,
it's a Samuel L. Jackson line.
I do appreciate that there's so much of his young friends in the trailer, at least the one that I watched.
Yes, there's a lot of them in the other trailer.
Yeah, and you know, that is one of those things that is so nice about Spider-Man in general, is that he does have friends, he does have a life outside of being a hero. And then of course the actors who played, particularly the one who played his best friend, whatever his name was
yes,
so great in Homecoming.
Jacob Batlin,
he
was a lot of fun, and he's definitely back. We can make a joke about how somehow all of Spider-Man's friends were snapped away. But we'll leave that there. that leaves The Farewell, which is a movie that came out of Sundance, and it stars Awkwafina, who you may remember from Crazy Rich Asians and the Ocean's 8 movie. But she's playing it a bit serious this time.
Mm-hmm. It looked like a really nice movie.
It's like Crazy Sad Asians.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what's funny, as I was watching this trailer, which looked just like a really lovely sort of family story, mm-hmm. About celebrating each other and, mourning loss, maybe while a person is still with you, that sort of thing. As I was watching it, I was sort of thinking, before Pikachu, there was a trailer for a film that looked quite nice too. These are the films that I worry we're not going to see as much of with so many of these big studios, coming together, right? This is a small story. And not only that, it's also certainly something that we can all watch, but it's obviously a Chinese family. So, will appeal very much to people who come from that culture, and hopefully white people like you and I will say, you know what, that's still a movie for me too. And before Pikachu, there was a film with a ridiculous name called The Sun Is Also a Star.
Yes.
Which, the same thing, I was watching the trailer going, this just looks like a really nice sort of teen romance between a black or Puerto Rican, but she's probably not Puerto Rican because she's being deported, but a black girl and an Asian. So, maybe not new immigrants, but certainly people in the States who don't look like you and I. Mm-hmm. And just a really nice love story with a little bit of, political whatever in there. And I'm like, I love that we're making these films and they're available to all of us. And I hope that that remains.
I laugh because I hope so too, and I'm looking forward to seeing Sirius Awkwafina, and it looks like an interesting story, about the clash of cultures in Western culture and Eastern culture, and how different cultures handle grief and disease and things. And it looks warm, and it looks inviting, and I look forward to seeing it.
You say Sirius Awkwafina, but it seemed like there was some humor in there.
Oh, too. there's a fair humor. It's not Sophie's Choice by any means, but it's a different shade of Awkwafina, shall we say? A different flavor of Awkwafina. That's a kind of water joke. Uh-huh, yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Jokes are better when you describe them.
Apparently, speaking of jokes, no, I'm kidding. We got Detective Pikachu coming up next. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, little guy. How did you get in here?
I know you can't understand me, but put down the stapler or I will electrocute you.
Did you just talk?
Whoa. Did you just understand me?
Wait. That is heavy eye contact right there. You heard me.
No.
Yes, you did.
Oh, my God. This is amazing. You can understand me.
Stop.
I've been so lonely.
And that was a clip from Pokemon Detective Pikachu, the new film from Rob Letterman, and it stars Ryan Reynolds, Justice Smith, Catherine Newton, Bill Nighy, and Ken Watanabe. Those last two were surprising.
Mm-hmm. Ken Watanabe was great.
Oh, no, he's... I mean, I'm glad they were able to squeeze a prominent Asian actor into this Asian originating franchise.
When you put it that way, God, now I feel terrible.
But seriously, we were talking between segments that were not of the Pokemon generation. We were a couple of generations before. So I watched the cartoon just that because I worked retail in university, and Pokemon cards were very big at the time, so I watched to see what the big deal was.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never really engaged in it.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed this.
Yeah. Prior to this, all of my Pokemon knowledge came from Super Smash Bros.
You mean Poke knowledge?
Yes, my Poke knowledge came from Super Smash Bros. So I knew a few very specific Pokemon, and that's it. And I appreciated all the kids around me as we were doing the like tour through Rhyme City.
Yeah.
And the kids around me were cleverly calling out the names of Pokemon for me so that I understood who was who and what was what. Yeah.
And that's something I will note is that you go into a movie like this where it obviously attracts a lot of kids, which means a lot of like breaks to the snack counter or to the washroom.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice a lot of that.
This
had attention from beginning to end.
Yeah, the only one I noticed was, and I noticed it because it was directly beside me. It was a young girl and her dad, and they left and then came back. And it was exactly at the moment that I sort of thought, I wonder if people are starting to get a little restless. And it was, and there was some a little bit of weird storytelling where we had to get a lot of exposition about Justice Smith's character, Tim, right? Tim?
Yes.
We
Tim
had to get
Goodman.
Yes. That name means nothing.
On the nose.
It means nothing. So we had to get a lot of exposition about his growing up.
Yeah.
And his parents and his relationship with them. And it was not given subtly.
No.
Which I think is probably... I mean, I feel like that's really the only thing I have to say about this film that I disliked. But it did worry me because it sort of happened up near the front. This, like, really sort of all this way of telling us what was going on. But during the part where we found out about his mom, that was... It felt like a little slow moving and also very emotionally manipulative. And, and that was the one moment that the kid beside me did, you know, they got up, went to the washroom. They did come back. They didn't come back to their seat. They just sat somewhere else, which I appreciate because they would have had to. I mean, and I would have been fine if they came back, but they were just like, we'll just sit right here where there's some extra seats, which is nice of them.
Fair enough. There's a bit of sloppy storytelling there, and it doesn't really answer like the key questions about why he and his dad didn't stay in touch or why he gave up his dream to be a Pokemon trainer. You know, there's some holes in the character development there. I also didn't like... This is a kind of a very kind of down-to-earth story for the most part, until they break into the secret Pokemon lab, and and then there's like a whole sequence where basically there are, I'll spoil it, but you know, there are big Pokemon under the ground, and it's just one of these big sort of CG action scenes that you get in like every kind of summer movie like this. That's just like, no.
And for absolutely no reason. Because essentially, like, these tortoises come up from the ground.
They're Terra tortoises or something.
Yeah, and then they look at each other, and then they all go back down.
Yeah.
And
it's without a purpose. And then, like, even the climax, too. Like, the villain's plot is not exactly well explained.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yes, what the ultimate goal is. I guess, I mean, you could just look at it as he had decided what was best for him.
Right.
Which, and because he's so smart and intelligent, it's obviously what's best for all of humanity.
Yeah, he's a Lex Luthor type, I suppose.
Yeah. I know, it was sort of like, it was the, yes. I will say, you're right, there were a lot of things about this film that were very, like... obvious.
Yes.
And that was okay.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, I think overall it's better than the sum of its parts. I find it very bizarre that this movie, which is a byproduct of a video game company, a franchise that has like tendrils in like cartoons and cards and action figures and video games, has like a very strong anti-corporatist message about like the concentration of power and the concentration of media. Maybe that's why it didn't get made at Disney. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, it is, there's something very simple about it. And I don't mean simple in a bad way. It just, you know, it's a boy and a tale of a boy and his dog almost. Yeah. Like whatever a Pikachu is.
<It's> But you're right. Yeah, it is a boy and his dog story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think really it's Justice Smith and his performance, mm-hmm. and Ryan Reynolds and his performance, and the really incredible CG work on Pikachu that really are the stars of this film. Like, you know, you're right, it's a little bit obvious, it's a little bit emotionally manipulative in some places. Nothing is really like new or surprising, mm-hmm. but it's all okay because watching these two and a half or two, three pieces together, it's just like, I could just keep watching these three pieces of, you know, Ryan Reynolds as Pikachu and Justice Smith together.
Yeah, it's, I don't know Justice Smith too much outside of, he was in the last Jurassic World movie, mm-hmm. which did not service him well.
See, and I couldn't. Yeah. See, I know him from The Get Down.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to remember because I just kept watching it going, I know this guy. Was he in? And I thought he might have been British because I was like, he's like street kid action sort of thing. And then I looked it up. I was like, oh, of course, The Get Down.
Yeah. But I mean, there's kind of, I don't know if it was intentional, but like early in the film, he's chased by like a Pokemon that kind of looks like a little dinosaur. So I don't know if that's like a reference.
Do you mean the Cubone?
Is
like
that
at
what
the beginning
called?
When he tries to catch a Pokemon, yeah. and the Pokemon didn't choose me, because that's the thing.
Right.
It's, I choose you.
That is complicated, and they don't really get into that, like, how does a Pokemon choose you? And anyway, moving right along.
I think you've got to play some Pokemon and watch some.
I'll definitely get on that. But I did like him in this. I like Justice Smith. I was not sure about Ryan Reynolds as like and I've seen the trailers too, and I would, you know, if you're gonna give the Pikachu normally it goes Pika 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 or, like things like that, but if you're gonna give it like a human voice, why not give him something like distinctive? Like a lot of people wanted Danny DeVito, for example.
Okay.
Like, hey, check me out, I'm a Pikachu. Like, that's what it would kind of sound like. I'm bad at impressions, but Ryan Reynolds, I don't want to classify him as a voice actor because of what he does in Deadpool, because Deadpool is also about the physicality, mm-hmm. but you know, I think Deadpool has helped him develop those skills too, mm-hmm. where he's able to really do so much with just his voice.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really sells you too, is that for me, coming out of like, because Pokemon wasn't part of my cultural upbringing, yeah. shall we say, to be able to get into this movie, instead of having Justice Smith and a little yellow cat dog thing going Pika Pika, having Ryan Reynolds there to be Ryan Reynolds, Pikachu, mm-hmm. Ryan Reynolds, helps. Admittedly, this movie probably wasn't made for a 40-year-old man.
Not unless you were an active Pokemon Go player and watched Pokemon.
Right, exactly. But it does help you get into the world in a way that I don't think you would have been able to otherwise if you're just coming into this with this, like, with whatever minimal Pokemon knowledge you have. And I actually enjoyed that world a lot. And a part of that is the effects work done. I don't know if it was mm-hmm. like all CG or if it was like some combination of puppetry and CG, but it's a really vivid world, and they did an excellent job integrating Pokemon in with regular people. It looked kind of seamless in places, and you mm-hmm. know, the whole Rhine City thing, it's like Blade Runner meets Sesame Street in a bizarre way. But, you know, to see like the Pokemon wandering around and the Charmanders and the Whatsits and the Dittos and the Mews and whatever, it works well. And, I mean, those are the scenes I liked, like when he's kind of wandering around Ryan City and, you know, you mm-hmm. see oddball creatures on the same street corners as regular humans, and it got me. Not that surprised me.
Yeah, well, and that's how I felt even with the trailer. And I don't remember which movie it was I was here covering, but there was a Pikachu trailer for it. And I remember saying, like, okay, this trailer, I did not expect. Like, I had heard about a Pokemon movie. I'm like, whatever, I don't really know Pokemon. And then I watched this trailer, and I was like, what? Why do I want to see this? Like, this trailer looks like this is going to be a good film. And, you know, as we say, despite all the flaws, and there are flaws to this, I still think that this is a good film. And I still think that people should see it.
It's enjoyable.
Yeah. And I do think that there are people in our age category who will appreciate this film because they are, you know, Pokemon Go players.
Yeah.
Right? You know, Pokemon, while it wasn't necessarily our generation at the time, we were a few years older than it, it has really stuck around and broadened in audience considerably. You know, as you might say with My Little Pony, for instance, right?
Sure.
It's really kind of amazing how some of these kids shows or kids properties have managed to broaden their audience to include, you know, 40-year-old people and still even serve them. You know, I don't think that there's going to be people who go to see this film in our age category who are like, ugh, that was terrible. It's just a kid's film. I didn't like that.
Yeah, and what this movie does is doubly tough, almost even triply or quadruply tough in places, because it has to be for the Pokemon fans. It has to draw in people who aren't Pokemon fans. It's a video game adaptation, and those have an abysmal track record. I don't know if I would go so far as to say, like, maybe this is the best video game movie adaptation that there's been, but it's definitely one of the better ones.
It sure looks better than Sonic the Hedgehog, which looks disappointing because I am a Sonic fan.
You didn't buy Jim Carrey and Gangster's Paradise?
God. I mean, Jim Carrey wasn't even the worst part. Like, what is with the characterization of Sonic? Like, just, he looks weird.
Yeah.
Weird. I will say one of my favorite parts of Pikachu, though, was when they were in the secret lab after the things got out, whatever those things were, you know, and attacked, what's her name, the reporter.
Yes.
When
who was good? I liked her a lot.
Yeah, she was good. Yeah. So after Tim went back, Tim and Detective Pikachu went back, and they're like, oh my God, where'd she go? What's going on? And there's like drops. Like slimy drops coming, and the kid in front of me says, "Buddy, get out of there!" I was like,
"Yeah,
yes, you are right, child.
Yes,
you are right. You will have a long life.
Don't look for the source of the slime. Very key. But yeah, I do. That actress, Catherine Newton, was a lot of fun. It's like this. She also reminds me of, like, she's a very sort of anime character. Somehow brought to life.
Yeah, her eyes seemed bigger than other people's. And she had the Deschanel eyes.
That's right. And I think I enjoyed her Pokemon the best, the Psyduck.
Oh my God!
It's just this bizarre creature that, like, you have to keep calm, or else he, like, has like a psychic burst.
Who chooses this as their Pokemon?
Especially her, because she seems
so,
like,
frantic.
Yes,
I know. I was like, at first, I was like, oh, I sort of get it because they're both really like. neurotic, but I'm like, no, actually, this is a terrible choice because she's so neurotic, she stresses him out.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. But the other point I wanted to make about the quadrupling down is that this is a shared world between, like, the Pokemon and the humans, and it's done in a really great way that, like, something like the Transformers movies haven't been able to do, where it's either Transformers action or it's human action. It doesn't really blend the things well, and this does manage to blend things well. You can enjoy the weirdness of the various Pokemon, including a mime Pokemon who can make his mimes real. And you know, there's also enough sort of human stuff that's not dull either. The worlds are integrated well, and I think it's a surprisingly fun time. So
yeah,
check
it
out.
I will say one more thing I did really like about the film, though. Catherine Newton's character, what is her name?
I think it's Lucy.
Lucy.
Yeah.
When she meets Detective Pikachu for the first time, and she's like, what's wrong with your Pokemon? Why is he wearing a hat? Like, is that really that odd? But that's apparently that odd. And he's got a hat on the whole time.
He's wearing a hat.
There is something wrong with this Pokemon. He's wearing a hat.
Initiate the independent thought alarm. Anyway, that's it for this week's episode of the show. And if you want to listen to it again, you can find it on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com, or you can download it from the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find us on social media, on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show, or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And Candace, where can people find you if they need to initiate an independent thought alarm?
I don't often wear hats, but when I do, be sure to tell me there's something wrong at Sin48 on Twitter, or, you know, wherever else. Just Google it. Sin48, C-I-N-N-4-8.
Is there another podcast you do?
There is another podcast I do, in fact, for The Bookshelf in downtown Guelph, and it's called The Village Podcast by The Bookshelf. If you just go to their website, bookshelf.ca, you will find it.
I wanted to, because they just came out with a new episode, so.
We did, that's true.
So there you go. Anyway, stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more Pokemon, end credits. And we will see you then.
Pika, pika.